Neighbors, Joseph Finder. I can't shake the feeling that they're up to something, Matt Parker said. He didn't need to say, the new neighbors. He was peering out their bedroom window through a gap between the slats of the Venetian blinds. Kate Parker looked up from her book, groaned.
Not this again. Come to bed. It's after 11.
I'm serious, Matt said.
So am I. Plus, they can probably see you staring at them.
Not from this angle, but just to be safe, he dropped the slat. He turned around, arms folded. I don't like them, he said.
You haven't even met them.
I saw you talking to them yesterday. I don't think they're a real couple. She's like 20 years younger than him.
Laura's 8 years younger than Jimmy.
He's got to be an Arab.
I think Laura said his parents are Persian.
Persian? Matt scoffed. That's just a fancy word for Iranian, like an Iraqi saying he's Mesopotamian or something. Kate shook her head and went back to her book. Some girl novel, an Oprah book club selection with a cover that looked like an Amish quilt. At the foot of their bed, the big flat-screen TV flickered a blue light across her delicate features. She had the sound muted. Matt didn't get how she could concentrate on a book with the TV on. Also, does he look like a Norwood to you? Matt said when he came back from brushing his teeth, a few stray white flecks of Colgate on his chin. Jimmy Norwood? What kind of name is Norwood for an Arab guy? That can't be his real name. Kate gave a small, tight sigh, folded down the corner of a page, and closed her book.
It's Nowerwood, actually.
She spelled it. That's not a real name. He climbed into bed. And where's their furniture? They didn't even have a moving van. They just showed up one day with all their stuff in that stupid little Toyota hybrid sardine can.
Boy, you really have been stalking them.
Matt jutted his jaw. I noticed stuff, like foreign-made cars.
Yeah, well, I hate to burst your bubble, but they're renting the house furnished from the Gormans. Ruth and Chuck didn't want to sell their house given the market these days, and there's no room in their condo in Boca for...
What kind of people would rent a furnished house?
Look at us. Kate pointed out. We move, like, every 2 years.
You knew when you married me that was how it would be. That's just part of the life. I'm telling you, there's something not quite right about them. Remember the Olsons in Pittsburgh?
Don't start.
Did I or did I not tell you their marriage was in trouble? You insisted Daphne had postpartum depression. Then they got divorced.
Yeah, like 5 years after we moved, Kate said. Half of all marriages end in divorce. Anyway, the Nowerwoods are a perfectly nice couple.
Something on TV caught Matt's eye. He fumbled for the remote, found it under the down comforter next to Kate's pillow, touched a button to bring up the sound.
Officials tell WXBS Nightcast that FBI intelligence reports indicate an increased level of terrorist chatter.
I love that word, chatter, Kate said. Makes it sound like they bugged Perez Hilton's tea set or something.
Shh, Matt raised the volume. The anchorman of the local news, who wore a cheap pinstriped suit and looked as if he was about 16, went on.
Heightened concerns about a possible terrorist strike in downtown Boston just 2 days from now.
The chyron next to him was a crude rendering of a crosshair and the words, Boston Terror Target. Now the picture cut to a reporter standing in the dark outside one of the big new skyscrapers in the financial district, the wind whipping his hair.
Ken, a spokesman for the Boston Police, told me just a few minutes ago that the mayor has ordered heightened security for all Boston landmarks, including the State House, Government Center, and all major office buildings.
Isn't that a little loud?
Kate said. But Matt continued to stare at the screen.
Speculates that the terrorists might be locally based. The police spokesman told me that their pattern seems to be to establish residence in or near a major city and assimilate themselves into the fabric of a neighborhood while they make their long-range plans, just as law enforcement authorities believe happened in the bombing in Chicago last year, also on April 19th, which, though never solved, is believed to be...
Yeah, Kate said.
Shh. FBI undercover operatives throughout the Boston area in an attempt to infiltrate this suspected terrorist ring,
the reporter said.
I love that, Kate said. It's always a ring. Why not a terrorist bracelet or a necklace?
This isn't funny, Matt said. Matt couldn't sleep. After tossing and turning for half an hour, he slipped quietly out of bed and padded down the hall to the tiny guest room that served as their home office. It was furnished with little more than a couple of filing cabinets for household bills and owner's manuals and the like, and an old Dell PC atop an IKEA desk. He opened a browser on the computer and entered James Norwood in Google. It came back. Did you mean James Norwood? No, damn it, he thought. I meant what I typed. All Google pulled up was a scattering of useless citations that happened to contain James and Wood and words that ended in Nour. Useless. He tried typing just Nourwood. Nothing. Some import-export firm based in Syria called Nour Wood, a high-pressure laminate company founded by a man named Nour. But if Google was right, and it usually was, there was nobody named Norwood in the entire world. Which meant that either their new neighbor was really flying under the radar, or that wasn't his real name. So Matt tried a powerful search engine called ZabaSearch, which could give you the home addresses of just about everybody, even celebrities. He entered Norwood and then selected Massachusetts in the pull-down menu of states. The answer came back instantly in big, red, mocking letters. No results match Norwood. Check your spelling and try your search again. Well, he thought, they've just moved here, probably too recent to show up yet. Anyway, they were renters, not owners, so maybe that explained why they didn't show up on the database yet in Massachusetts. He went back to the ZabaSearch homepage and this time left the default All 50 States selected. Same thing. No results match Norwood. What did that mean? They didn't show up anywhere in the country? That was impossible. No, he told himself. Maybe not. If Norwood, as he'd suspected, wasn't a real name. This strange couple was living right next door under an assumed name. Matt's spidey sense was starting to tingle. He remembered how once as a kid he'd entered the tool shed in back of the house in Bellingham, and suddenly the hairs on the back of his neck stood up, thick as cleats. He had no idea why. A few seconds later he realized that the coil of rope in the corner of the dimly lit shed was actually a snake. He stood frozen in place, fascinated and terrified by its shiny skin, its bold orange and white and black stripes. True, it was only a king snake, but what if it had been one of the venomous pit vipers sometimes found in western Washington state? Like a prairie rattlesnake. Since that day, he'd learned to trust his instincts. The unconscious often senses danger long before the conscious mind.
What are you doing?
He started at Kate's voice. The wall-to-wall carpet had muffled her approach. Why are you awake, babe? He said.
Matt, it's like 2 in the morning,
Kate said, her voice sleep husky.
What the hell are you doing?
He quickly closed the browser, but she'd already seen it.
You're Googling the neighbors now?
They don't even exist, Kate. I told you there's something wrong with them.
Believe me, they exist, Kate said. They're very real. She even teaches Pilates.
You sure you have the right spelling?
It's on their mailbox, she said. Look for yourself.
Oh, right, that's real hard proof, he said, a little too heavy on the sarcasm. Did they give you a phone number? A cell phone, maybe?
Jesus Christ. Look, you have any questions for them, why don't you ask them yourself tomorrow night? Or I guess it's tonight by now.
Tonight?
The Kramer's cocktail party? I told you about it like 5 times. They're having the neighbors over to show off their new renovation.
Matt groaned.
We've turned down their last 2 invitations. We have to go.
She rubbed her eyes.
You know, you're really being ridiculous.
Better safe than sorry. When I think about my brother, Donnie, I mean, he was a great soldier, a true patriot, and look what happened to him.
Don't think about your brother,
she said softly. I can't stop thinking about him. You know that.
Come back to bed,
Kate said. For the rest of the night, Matt found himself listening to Kate's soft breathing and watching the numbers change on the digital clock. At 4:58 a.m., he finally gave up trying to sleep. Slipping quietly out of bed, he threw on yesterday's clothes and went downstairs to pee so he wouldn't wake Kate. As he stood at the toilet, he found himself looking idly out the window over the cafe curtains at the side of the Gorman's house, not 20 feet away. The windows were dark. The Nowerwoods were asleep. He saw their car parked in the driveway, which gave him an idea. Grabbing a pen from the kitchen counter and the only scrap of paper he could find quickly, a supermarket register receipt, he opened the back door and stepped out into the darkness, catching the screen door before it could slam, pushing it gently closed until the pneumatic hiss stopped and the latch clicked. The night, really the morning, was moonless and starless, with just the faintest pale glow on the horizon. He could barely see 5 feet in front of him. He crossed the narrow grassy rectangle that separated the two houses and stood at the verge of Nowerwood's driveway, the little car a hulking silhouette. But gradually his eyes adjusted to the dark, and there was a little ambient light from a distant street lamp. Nowerwood's car, a Toyota Yaris, was one of those ridiculous foreign-made Econobox hybrids. It looked as if you could lift it up with one hand. The license plate was completely in shadow, so he came closer for a better look. Suddenly his eyes were dazzled by the harsh light from a set of halogen floods mounted above the garage. For a sickening moment he thought that maybe Nowerwood had seen someone prowling around and flicked a switch. But no, Matt had apparently tripped a motion sensor. What if they kept their bedroom curtains open and one of them wasn't a sound sleeper? He'd have to move quickly now, just to be safe. Now, at least, he could make out the license plate clearly. He wrote the numbers on the register receipt, then turned to go back, when he collided with someone. Startled, Matt gave an involuntary shout, a sort of "ugh" sound at exactly the same time as someone said,
"Jesus!"
James Nowerwood. He was a good 6 inches taller than Matt, with a broad, athletic build, and wore a striped bathrobe, unruly tufts of black chest hair sprouting over the top.
"Can I help you?"
Nowerwood said with an impersonal scowl. "Oh, I'm sorry," Matt said. "I'm Matt Parker, your, next-door neighbor." His mind was spinning like a hamster on a wheel, trying to devise a plausible explanation for why he'd been hunching over his neighbor's car at 5 in the morning. What could he possibly say? "I was curious about your hybrid. Given the Cadillac Escalade in Matt's garage, whose mileage was measured in gallons per mile, not exactly."
"Ah," Nowerwood said. "Nice to meet you."
He sounded almost arch. He had a neatly trimmed goatee and a dark complexion that made him look as if he had a deep suntan. Nowerwood extended a hand and they shook. His hand was large and dry, his clasp limp.
"You scared the living daylights out of me. I came out to see if the paper was here yet. I thought someone was trying to steal my car."
He had the faintest accent, though hardly anyone else would have picked up on the telltale traces. Something slightly off about the cadence, the intonation, the vowel formation. Like someone born and raised in this country of parents who weren't native speakers, who perhaps spoke Arabic since infancy and was probably bilingual.
"Yeah, sorry about that. My wife lost an earring and she's all upset about it, and I figured it might have dropped when she came over to visit you guys yesterday."
"Oh?"
Nowerwood said.
"Did she visit us yesterday? I'm sorry I missed her."
"Yep," Matt said. Did Kate say she'd gone over to their house yesterday, or was he remembering that wrong? "Pretty sure it was yesterday. Anyway, it's not like it's fancy or anything, but it sort of has sentimental value."
"I see."
"Yeah, it was the first gift I ever gave her when we started going out, and I'm not much of a gift giver, so I guess that makes it a collector's item." Nowerwood chuckled politely.
"Well, I'll let you know if I see anything."
He cocked a brow.
"Though it might be a bit easier to look after the sun comes up."
I know," Matt said hastily. "But I wanted to surprise her when she woke up."
"I see,"
Nowerwood said dubiously.
"Of course."
"I notice you have mass plates. You from in-state?"
"Those plates are brand new."
"Uh-huh." Matt noticed he didn't say whether he was or wasn't from Massachusetts. Just that the license plates were new. He was being evasive. "So you're not from around here, I take it?" Nowerwood shook his head slowly. "Yeah, where are you from?"
Good Lord, where aren't I from? I've lived just about everywhere, it seems.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I hate to be rude, but I have some work to do, and it's my turn to make breakfast. Will we see you tonight at the Kramer's party?
I thought I heard voices outside,
Kate said, scraping the last spoonful of yogurt and bran buds from her bowl. She looked tired and grumpy. Matt shrugged, shook his head. He was embarrassed about what had happened and didn't feel like getting into it.
Oh, yeah?
Maybe I dreamed it. Mind if I finish this off?
She pointed her spoon at the round tub of overpriced yogurt she'd bought at Trader Joe's.
Go ahead,
he said, sliding the yogurt toward her. He hated the stuff. It tasted like old gym socks. More coffee?
I'm good. You were up early.
Couldn't sleep. He picked up the quart of whole milk and was about to pour some into his coffee when he noticed the date stamped on the top of the carton.
Past the sell-by date, he said. Any more in the fridge?
That's the last,
she said.
But it's fine.
It's expired.
It's perfectly good.
Perfectly good, he repeated. Ever notice how you always say something's perfectly good when something's actually not quite right about it? He sniffed the carton, but couldn't detect any sour smell. That didn't mean it hadn't begun to turn, of course. You couldn't always tell from the smell alone. He poured the milk slowly, suspiciously, into his coffee, alert for the tiniest curds, and he didn't see any. Maybe it was okay after all. Just like the Narrowoods, you said they were perfectly nice, which means you know something's off about them.
I think you drink too much coffee,
she said.
Maybe that's what's keeping you up nights.
The Boston Globe was spread between them on the small round table, a moisture ring from the yogurt container wrinkling the banner headline. FBI probe possible local terror plot. Security heightened in high-rises, government buildings. He stabbed the paper with a stubby index finger.
See, that's what's keeping me up nights, he said. The Narrowoods are keeping me up nights.
Matt, it's too early.
Fine, he said. Just don't say I didn't warn you. He took a sip of coffee. Why'd they move into the neighborhood anyway?
What's that supposed to mean?
Was it for a job or something? Did they say? Kate rolled her eyes in that way that always annoyed him.
He got a job at ADS.
In Hopkinton? ADS was the big tech company that used to be known by its full name, Andromeda Data Systems. They made, well, he wasn't sure what they did exactly. Data storage, maybe? Something like that?
That what he told you?
She nodded.
There you go. If he really got a job at ADS, why didn't they move somewhere closer to Hopkinton?
That's the flaw in his cover. She looked at him disdainfully for a long moment and then said,
Can you please just drop this already? You're just going to make yourself crazy.
Now he saw that he was upsetting her and he felt bad. Softly, he said, You ever hear back from the doctor? She shook her head. What's the holdup? She shook her head again, compressed her lips.
I wish I knew.
I don't want you to worry. He'll call.
I'm not worried. You're the one who's worried.
Well, that's my job, Matt said. I worry for both of us.
The engineering firm where Matt worked was right in downtown Boston in the tallest building in the city, a sleek 60-story tower with a skin of blue reflective glass. It was a fine, proud landmark, a mirror in the sky. Matt, a structural engineer by training and an architecture nut by avocation, knew quite a bit about its construction. He heard stories about how, shortly after it was built, it would shed entire window panes on windy days like some reptile shedding its scales. You'd be walking down the street admiring the latest addition to the Boston skyline, and suddenly you'd be crushed beneath 500 pounds of glass, a hail of jagged shards maiming other passers-by. You'd never know what hit you. Funny how things like that could happen, things you'd never in a million years expect. A flying window, of all things. No one was ever safe. A Swiss engineer even concluded years after it was built that in certain wind conditions the tower might actually bend in the middle, might topple right over on its narrow base.
How strange, he'd often thought, to be working in such a grandiose landmark, this massive spire so high above the city, and yet be so completely vulnerable, in a glass coffin. He eased his big black Cadillac Escalade down the ramp into the underground parking garage. A couple of uniformed security guards emerged from their booth. This was a new procedure as of a few days ago, with the heightened security. Matt clicked off the radio, his favorite sports talk radio show, the host arguing with some idiot about the Red Sox bullpen, and lowered the tinted window as the older guard approached. Meanwhile, the younger one circled around to the back of the Escalade and gave it a sharp rap.
"Oh, hey, Mr. Parker,"
the gray-haired guard said. "Morning, Carlos," Matt said.
"How about them Sox?"
"Going all the way this year."
"The Vision, at least, huh?"
"All the way to the World Series."
"Not this year."
"Come on, keep the faith."
"You ain't been around here long enough,"
Carlos said.
"You don't know about the curse."
"No such thing anymore."
"When you've been a Sox fan as long as me, you're just waiting for the late season choke. It still happens. You'll see."
He called out to his younger colleague.
"This guy's okay. Mr. Parker is a senior manager at Bristol Worldwide on 27.
"How's it going?"
the younger guard said, backing away from the car. "Hey," Matt said, then mock stern said, "Carlos, you know, you guys should really check everyone's car."
"Yeah, yeah,"
Carlos said. Matt wagged his finger. "It only takes one vehicle."
"If you say so."
But it was true, of course. All someone had to do was pack a car, not even a truck, it wouldn't have to be any bigger than this Escalade, with RDX and park it in the right location in the garage. RDX could slice through steel support pillars like a razor blade through a tomato. Part of the floor directly above would cave right in, then the floor above that, and pretty soon, in a matter of seconds, the whole building would pancake. This was the principle of controlled demolition. The explosives were just the trigger. Gravity did the real work for you. It always amazed him how little people understood the fragility of the structures in which they lived and worked. "Hey," Matt said, "you guys ever get the CCTV cameras at the Stewart Street entrance fixed?"
"Hell didn't freeze over last I checked,"
said Carlos. Matt shook his head. "Not good," he said, "not in times like these." The senior guard gave the Escalade a friendly, open-handed pat as if sending it on its way.
"Tell me about it,"
he said. The first thing Matt did when he got to his cubicle was call home. Kate answered on the first ring. "No word from the doctor yet?" he asked.
"No,"
Kate said.
"I thought you were him."
"Sorry. Let me know when you hear something, okay?"
"I'll call as soon as I hear. I promise."
He hung up, checked his online office calendar, and realized he had 10 minutes before the morning staff meeting. He pulled up Google and entered license plate search, which produced a long list of websites, most of them dubious. One promised, "Find out the truth about anyone." But when he entered Norwood's license plate number and selected Massachusetts, he was shuttled to another page that wanted him to fill out all kinds of information about himself and give his credit card number. That wasn't going to happen. Another one featured a ridiculous photo of a man dressed up to look like someone's idea of a detective, right down to the Sherlock Holmes hat and the big magnifying glass, in which his right eye was grotesquely enlarged. Not very promising, but he entered the license plate number anyway, only to find that Massachusetts wasn't one of the available states. Another site looked more serious, but the fine print explained that when you entered a license plate and your own credit card information, you were assigned to a private investigator. He didn't like that. It made him nervous. He didn't want to be exposed that way. Plus, it said the search would take 3 to 5 business days. By then, it would be too late. He clicked on yet another website, which instantly spawned a dozen lewd pop-up ads that took over his whole screen. And then Matt noticed his manager, Regina, approaching his cubicle. Frantically, he looked for a power button on his monitor but couldn't find one. That was the last thing he needed, for Regina to sidle into his cubicle asking about the RFP, a request for proposal he was late on, and see all this porn on his computer screen. But when she was maybe 6 feet away, she came to an abrupt halt, as if remembering something, and returned to her office. Crisis averted. As he restarted his computer, he found himself increasingly baffled. How could this guy, this James Nowerwood, not appear anywhere on the internet? That was just about impossible these days. Everyone left digital grease stains and skid marks, whether it was phone numbers, political contributions, high school reunion listings, property sales, corporate websites. Corporate websites. Now there was a thought. Where was it that Nowerwood worked again? Ah, yes, the big tech company ADS in Hopkinton. Or so he had told Kate. Well, that was simple to check. He found the ADS main phone number. An operator answered.
Good morning, ADS.
I'd like to speak with one of your employees, please. James Nowerwood.
Just a moment.
Matt's heart fluttered. What if Nowerwood answered his own line? Matt would have no choice but to hang up immediately, of course, but what if his name showed up on Nowerwood's caller ID? Faint keyboard tapping in the background and then absolute silence. He held his index finger hovered just above the plunger, ready to disconnect the call as soon as he heard Nowerwood's voice. Then again, if Nowerwood really did answer the phone, then maybe it wasn't some cover name after all. Maybe there was some benign explanation for the fact that he couldn't be found on the internet. His finger hovered, twitched. He stroked the cool plastic of the plunger button, ready to depress it with the lightning reflexes of a sniper. There was a click, and then the operator's voice again.
How are you spelling that, sir?
Matt spelled Nowerwood for her slowly.
I'm checking, but I don't find anyone with that name. I even looked under Nowood, but I didn't find that either. Any idea what department he might be in?
Matt's twitchy index finger couldn't be restrained anymore, and he ended the call. After the staff meeting, he stopped by Len Baxter's office. Lenny was the head of IT in Bristol's Boston office, a bearded, gnome-like figure who kept to himself but had always been helpful whenever Matt had a computer problem. Every day, no matter the season, he wore an unvarying uniform. Jeans, a plaid flannel shirt, and a Red Sox baseball cap, no doubt to conceal his bald spot. Everyone had something to hide.
Matty boy, what can I do for you?
Lenny said. I need a favor, Matt said.
Gonna cost you.
Lenny flashed a grin.
Kidding, talk to me.
Can you do a quick public records search on LexisNexis? Lenny cocked his head.
For what?
Just a name, James Nowerwood. He spelled it.
This a personal matter?
Oh no, nothing like that. He's just some sales guy at ADS who keeps trying to sell us a data recovery program, and I don't know, I get this funny feeling about him.
I can't do that,
Lenny said gravely.
That would be a violation of the Privacy Act of 1974, as well as the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act.
Matt's stomach flipped over. But then Lenny grinned.
Just messing with you. Sure, happy to.
He crunched away at his keyboard, squinted at the screen, tapped some more.
Spell it again?
Matt did.
Funny, not coming up with anything.
Matt swallowed. You're not? Lenny's stubby fingers flew over the keyboard.
Very peculiar, he said. Your guy isn't registered to vote and never got a driver's license, hasn't purchased any property. You sure he's not a figment of your imagination?
Know what? I must have gotten his name wrong. Never mind. I'll get back to you.
No worries,
Lenny said.
Anytime.
Matt was hardly a party animal. He disliked socializing, particularly with the neighbors. Wherever he lived, he preferred to keep a low profile. Plus, he didn't much like the Kramers. They had the biggest house in the neighborhood and a lawn like a golf course, and every year they resealed their driveway so it looked like polished onyx. They were throwing a party tonight to show off their latest renovation. Matt found this annoying. If you could afford to spend $500,000 remodeling your house, the least you could do was keep quiet about it. But this was one party that Matt was actually looking forward to. He wanted to ask the Nowerwoods a few questions. The party was already in full swing when he arrived. Giddy, lubricated laughter and the smells of strong perfume and gin and melted cheese. He smiled at the neighbors, most of whom he didn't know, said hello to Audrey Kramer, and then caught sight of Kate chatting amiably with the Nowerwoods. He froze. Why was she being so friendly to them? As soon as Kate spied Matt, she waved him over.
Jimmy, Laura, my husband, Matt.
Narrowood was dressed in an expensive-looking blue suit, a crisp white shirt, and a striped tie. He looked prosperous and preening. His wife was small and blonde and plain, solidly built, with small, pert features. Next to her husband, she looked washed out. They really didn't look like a married couple, Matt thought. They didn't seem to fit together in any way. Both of them smiled politely and extended their hands, and Matt noticed that her handshake was a lot firmer than her husband's.
"We've met,"
Narwood said, his dark eyes gleaming.
"You have?"
Kate said.
"Early this morning. He didn't tell you."
Narwood laughed, showing very white, even teeth.
"Very early this morning."
Kate flashed Matt a look of surprise.
"No."
"Did you ever find your earring?"
Narwood asked Kate.
"Earring?"
she said.
"What earring?"
"The one Matt gave to you, his first gift to you."
Matt tried to intercept her with a warning look, but Kate gave him no chance.
"This guy?"
she said.
"I don't think he's ever given me a pair of earrings the whole time I've known him."
"Ah,"
Narwood said, his eyes bored right into Matt like an X-ray.
"I misunderstood."
Matt's face went hot and prickly, and he wondered how obvious it was. He'd been caught in a transparent lie. How was he going to explain what he'd really been doing in Narwood's driveway at 5 in the morning without sounding defensive or sketchy? And then he rebuked himself. This guy's a liar and an undercover operative, and you're acting like the guilty one? The two women launched into a high-spirited conversation, like old friends, about restaurants and movies and shopping, leaving the two men standing there in awkward silence.
"My apologies,"
Narwood said quietly.
"I should have thought before I said anything. We all have things we prefer to keep hidden from our spouses."